Barry hung his coat, ran his hands over his hair, turned and walked along a short, carpeted corridor to the bar. He wondered if Colette the barmaid, a big, motherly woman, would be on duty tonight. This part of the building, he knew, had been an old coaching inn built in 1614, and generations of owners had very sensibly preserved the whitewashed daub and wattle walls and the heavy, rough-hewn, black-ceiling beams. C.S. Lewis had stayed here in 1958 with his wife, Joy, for what he called a perfect fortnight. Barry went through a door to his left into a low-ceilinged room, where a turf fire blazed in a wide grate. After the bitter cold of the day outside, the heat was stifling, but the scent of the burning peat was familiar and comforting to him. There were several men in the room, most standing at the bar, a few in booths beside the wall. Barry heard a murmuring of conversation. The smells of damp tweed and cigarette smoke mingled with the aroma of peat. He could hear the sleet outside rattling off the curtained windows.
"You!"
roared Dr. Fingal Flaherty O'Reilly, who stood leaning against the bar.
"Look like a drowned rat. Come on in and have a jar."
"Thanks, Fingal."
"What'll you have?"
Barry rapidly rubbed his hands together, feeling them tingle as the circulation returned. "Hot Irish, please." O'Reilly turned to the barmaid, who stood behind the marble-topped bar, polishing a straight pint glass with a dish towel.
"Do you hear that, Colette?"
"Hot half and it is, Doctor."
"Half and be damned.
Give him a double."
"How are you, Colette?" Barry asked, turning his back on O'Reilly, shaking his head at her and mouthing silently, "Just a half." A double whiskey on top of his tiredness could be the end of him. Her smile was wide and welcoming as she nodded her understanding of his order and said,
"Grand so am. Haven't seen you in for a wee while."
"I've been busy." "Jesus, lass, would you give the young fella his jar?" O'Reilly said.
"Coming up."
She moved away and switched on an electric kettle.
"Now, Dr. Laverty," growled O'Reilly, "where the hell have you been?"
Barry looked at the big man's florid, craggy face, bushy eyebrows, and his bent nose with a distinct list to port. O'Reilly was in his shirt sleeves, red braces holding up his tweed pants. A glass, a large glass, of what Barry knew would be Irish whiskey, was clutched in one hand.
"Working?" "Working. When I left the house for the wedding, the door to the surgery was still shut, but there were only a couple of customers in the waiting room. Newla Harkness never takes long."
"Maybe not for you, Fingal. You've known the woman for nearly 20 years. O'Reilly grunted.
"And Harry the Boots Hawthorne."
"Who?"
"Harry the Boots Hawthorne. They call him that because when he was first married, his wife told her best friend he was so virile that when he came in from the fields and feeling his oats, wanting her, he wouldn't even take the time to get his boots off."
Barry laughed. "I've read Napoleon was like that with Josephine."
"Maybe Harry had read it too. Anyway, the wife's friend told her husband, and he told..."
Barry nodded. He had already experienced just how quickly news could fly around the village of Ballybuckle Bow.
"So now the lads won't let him live it down, and they call him Harry the Boots. He usually comes in for a tonic, and you can finish with him in 5 minutes.
Barry shook his head. "You can, Fingal. But I've only been here for a few months, and if I want to know the patients as well as you, I have to spend a bit of time getting to know them."
"I suppose so."
O'Reilly frowned.
"But two more shouldn't have taken you until now. We expected to see you at the service."
"Harry took longer than I expected. Then Jeannie Jingles phoned. She thought her wee Eddie had croup and..."
"And you went to see the lad?"
There was a hint of paleness in the tip of O'Reilly's nose, a sure sign that his temper was not entirely under control. "I know you're meant to be on call today for emergencies, Fingal, but..."
"You thought you'd do me a favour?"
The pallor spread. "Not a favour. You were already in the church. It made sense to me to call in and see the kiddie. I thought it would only take a minute."
"Huh? Some minute? The service was over at 2:30. You should have been there."
"I'm sorry." Barry held one hand at shoulder height, palm out.
If I'd known I was depriving you of the pure delights, the immensely satisfying medical moments of seeing one more case of common croup, I'd have sent a police escort to haul you out of your pew.
O'Reilly managed to chuckle.
All right, have it your own way. Work yourself into an early grave if that's what you want. See if I give a tinker's damn.
The laugh lines deepened at the corners of his eyes.